Doug Katz has been praised as one of Cleveland's best young chefs, with mentions in Bon Appetit, The Wall Street Journal, and others. Diners seem to agree as they pack into Fire Food and Drink at Shaker Square on a nightly basis to sample Katz's culinary delights. If you catch a glimpse of Doug Katz in the kitchen or greeting his patrons, you'll see a young man in good shape. But that wasn't always the case. As a child, Katz struggled terribly with his weight. Because of his interest in cooking as a child, he also spent a lot of time in the kitchen, where he was discouraged from eating, but then at the dinner table was told to clean his plate. Being overweight created a vicious cycle of eating to find comfort, only to become angry at himself for being fat, which caused him to eat even more. Doug Katz joins us today to tell us what it took to break that cycle. Doug, welcome back.
Thank you.
So what are some of your earliest memories of food and the emotions you associate with it?
Well, it was always the happiest time in our family. We would, gather around the table for holidays. We'd always cook at Thanksgiving, and we'd but my most vivid memories would be after school at snack time, and I would sit in front of the television, really, and I would just, my mom would get this loaf of Junta's challah, which, I just remembered so vividly. It was sliced, and I would eat a slice, and then I'd eat another slice and another slice, and I honestly remember.
It's a rich bread with lots of eggs.
Yes, eggs, butter. Mm-hmm. And I honestly remember probably a loaf and a half at a
sitting. At one sitting,
yeah,
wow.
And she would buy it, and it would be gone the next day. And then I would eat dinner. And then we'd get, donuts after dinner, at the corner store. And so it would just continue.
And did people in your family, your mom, say things to you about your eating habits, about your weight?
Well, she was a thin mom, and she never had any issue, and she ate candy and all that kind of stuff, which she wouldn't want me to tell. But my father, my brother, and I always had, weight issues, I would say. And she would say when she was cooking, that she was going to put a lock on the refrigerator, that we just, we needed to get out of the kitchen, that kind of thing. But then at the table, I think it was more just, that if we didn't eat something, what was wrong, sort of thing.
So right. Yeah, and children need food somewhere, so you should be grateful for this.
Right.
Was there a ritual when it came to dessert? I know my dad always said, it's not a meal if you don't have dessert at the end of it.
For us, it was. And honestly, I talked about the donut store. I mean, we lived, about a block and a half from a donut store. And I remember Tuesday nights, my dad would come home for dinner, and we'd eat, and we'd all sit at the table, and we'd glance at each other, and we'd say, should we go get donuts now? Or should we go get, the Chinese almond cookies at the corner? Or I never felt that it was complete unless we had some sort of dessert. And if we didn't have dessert, then we were snacking until bed, from the cupboard.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned mixed messages, mm-hmm, that you got about eating. As you were talking about in the kitchen, it was don't sample the food, but at the table, it was another thing. When you were on your own, still a child, but away from the family, did you begin to eat more when people in the family couldn't see you? I mean, were you a secret eater?
I was, I think in elementary school and as a young child, I was the fat kid. I started eating at a young age, and I just, my height did not keep up, and I ate and ate and ate. And I think at school, I had a lot of social pressures that made me unhappy. And then I would come home and I would eat. And I loved that feeling of being full and sitting there and just, I don't think I was even focusing on what it was, but I would just.
It was just comforting to get
right.
Those tastes in your mouth.
And the more I could eat, the better, and the more full I felt, it was, mm-hmm, I was happy. And then I'd go to school the next day and be unhappy, and then I'd come home and do the same thing over again. And so I think eating for me, if I could eat in the afternoon, and, at the table, I think I was more controlled because there was only so much. I would certainly go back for seconds, but, the meals were amazing, and I, but I wanted to eat before, too, just to, mm-hmm, have that full feeling.
Mm-hmm. How soon did being overweight start becoming a problem for you?
It was a problem, I would say, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old. I remember with my brother and I would take behavior modification classes. We would go to a woman's house on Saturdays, and she would tell us to write everything down we ate, and we had this many calories to eat. Or at another time, we would be on an exercise regimen, or at camp when we were little, my brother and I were sort of in the fat group where we had to have the trim milk. We weren't allowed to have the whole milk. And we were sort of singled out, five of us. I remember each year we'd sit on the hill at camp in Wisconsin, and we would talk about how, how we could make better choices and eat fruit and eat these things. So,
did that sink in at that time?
No, because it was the weight issue was important in our family, but it didn't sink in because I don't think I knew any other way to make myself happy. Mm-hmm. I think that I just, you know, that's what made me happy. I loved food. It was the only thing I thought of. When we traveled, it was interesting. One trip we had, my parents were going to take us, and they actually thought, well, we're going to eat so much on the trip. Why don't we lose 10 pounds before we go? And they said, they invited us to go and said, if you can lose 10 pounds, we're going to all go on this trip. And so it was a regimen in our family. Let's lose the weight and then we can go on the trip. And of course, we went on the trip. And we, you know, I certainly, by the time I got back, I had gained the 10 pounds back, right?
How did studying to be a chef change your attitude about yourself and about food?
I think it really started in high school. I always knew I was going to be a chef, but in high school, I started a catering business. And I started with a positive experience, I think. And my friends at school would look at that, and I think they thought that that was, you know, really neat. And so I think my social pressures were diminishing, and people thought that that was a cool thing. And I felt happier, I think, in my day-to-day life. And then I sort of took that next step, and I said, okay, now I have to, you know, why don't I do some exercise and make myself happier this way? And I really enjoyed running, and my brother went off to college, became a vegetarian. I followed in his footsteps and thought, I have to cut out these food groups because that way I could, you know, really control what I was eating. And it really worked for a long time, and I was able to, you know, eat as much food as I wanted as a vegetarian and, you know, work these things out. But I felt much happier. And then in college, I felt much happier too. I didn't see the vegetarian diet as a problem, but it became, I think, a problem because I just was still eating as much as I wanted. I was just trying to cut out food groups. But ultimately, I was happy because I was doing something I loved. I was cooking with food every day. It was something that was a part of my life that I knew I would, you know, always have. So.
And I'm talking with Doug Katz, the critically acclaimed chef of Fire Food and Drink at Shaker Square. He joins us today to share his own personal struggle with food as part of IdeaStream's Fighting Fat series. And when I think about someone who's a chef, I picture someone who's always tasting and testing. And is that like being a bartender with a drinking problem?
It is. I think, I mean, when we were talking about the vegetarian thing, I realized when I went to culinary school, there was no way I could be a vegetarian anymore. I had to eat the meat. I had to butcher the meat. And so I stopped being a vegetarian then. And I, you know, in pastry class, all you did was eat pastry and all. And even today, I would say I go through the kitchen and I see all these pastries and I think, well, I have to just grab this and grab this. And I've learned to deal with that, but it's very hard in that atmosphere because your job is to taste food and to sample it, and you know, you really.
And when you say you've learned to deal with it, does that mean you've learned not to take it, or does that mean you've learned to just take a bite and let it go?
I struggle with the weight, you know, every year of my life. Last July, I decided that I was going to make a big effort to really cut out the excess and to really think about what I was putting in my mouth. And I really started watching my white sugar intake and my white flour. And so it helped me control what desserts I was eating and what other things I was eating and making choices that were better. And I lost about 20 pounds from July until December, and I've kept that off, and I feel so great. I don't feel that need to fill myself up because I feel so much better not being full.
And I've got to say, you look marvelous.
Thank you. Thanks.
Well, earlier in the show, we heard from food writer Michael Pollan, and I understand he was a big influence on you. Describe in what way and how that factors into how you run your restaurant.
Well, I was lucky enough to be chosen to go to an event, a slow food event in Italy called Terra Madre, and Michael Pollan was a speaker at that event. I've also read Omnivore's Dilemma. I've read all of his books, and when I read the chapters on corn and, you know, how there's corn in all of our, you know, food items, it was shocking to me to really think of that. And so at Fire, we really focus on local food, sustainable cooking. We focus on slow food, which is really cooking together, making things from scratch, knowing that the ingredients we use are from a local farm, and we go to that farm and visit. And so I think respecting the food that we have at Fire, you realize, you know, how lucky you are to have this, and it actually makes you eat more nutritiously, because there is not always an endless supply of these products. I went on a maple. I went to make maple syrup once, and you realize, you know, when you're collecting the sap, how much syrup that actually makes. I had a 5-gallon bucket, and you know that cooks down to almost nothing. And you realize, you know, every time you pour it into something, you're so careful. And I think it affects your diet too, because you take so much pride in what that person is doing, and you eat less of it, or you savor it more.
Yeah. And when you talk about farmers, you're talking about small, independent growers who have a one-to-one connection with their animals, with their land, not a big agribusiness kind of thing.
Right. People we're connecting with at the farmers markets, and we have one, Aaron and Melissa Miller have a farm. We get all of our grass-fed beef from them, and we get our eggs from them. And it's just the most beautiful, amazing farm. You go out there, and one time we went out for a visit, and Melissa made us a little breakfast, and we toured the farm, and we saw the pigs and the chickens and the cattle, and to see what he does and how the cattle, you know, how the cows are raised and how the chickens are raised. And it's really, you know, the Michael Pollan stories are really done there, and he's been doing it for years and years and years. And it's just so great to see someone like that. And when I read Michael Pollan's stories, I was able to say, wow, you know, we have this in Cleveland, and I want to do as much as I can to support that and give people at FIRE that kind of food.
And that's reflected in the menu. Talk about some of the changes that you've made to make the menu more healthy.
Well, we use grass-fed beef, you know, for our hamburger. It's a local grass-fed beef. We use local eggs. We have a vegan entree on the menu at all times, which we try and make it very creative. It's actually the most fun dish that we create, I think, each menu, because we really put a lot of time and thought into it. We have a stir-fried rice dish on the menu that we initially started with white rice, and we decided to switch to brown rice because we're stir-frying the rice. It's something that, you know, from a flavor profile, you really... As a customer, you know, it would not change that dish at all, and it's much healthier for you.
And I'm curious, Michael and Dan were talking a lot about fat, good fat, bad fat. What kind of fat do you use? What do you sanction for your kitchen?
Well, for my restaurant, I think real food is the key to what we do. And I think you really, you know, having butter, having cream, having all of these fats is, you have to do everything in moderation. But we know where our butter is coming from. We know where our cream is coming from. We know where our eggs are coming from and our meat. And we visit the farms. And to me, you can't do any better than that. I think there is some willpower that goes into that. But to know that our butter is local butter, and to know that every time we crack an egg that it's, you know, it's from a chicken that's an hour from here, I think it really makes you respect the food, and you end up respecting what you ingest and eat, and you end up eating less because there isn't an overabundance, you know. Okay. Yeah. And even with fish as well, we do, you know, similar. We have we're involved in a program through the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which makes us, you know, think about how much fish we're eating.
Excellent. And you're making me hungry, so I'll go find something healthy soon.
That's great.
Doug, it's a great pleasure to have you in. My guest has been Doug Katz, the chef owner of FIRE Food and Drink at Shaker Square. He spoke with us today as part of IdeaStream's Fighting Fat coverage. For more on Doug and his restaurant, log on to our homepage today online at wcpn.org, where you can also link to our Fighting Fat coverage.